No man is free who is not the master of himself. Yes, today we are taking a journey back into the heart of Stoicism, when a man named Epictetus wrote those words. He was born into the chains of slavery, and in fact, he was beaten so forcefully that he became crippled for the rest of his life. But despite his setbacks and many injustices, he was able to discover the keys to mental freedom and happiness, and went on to become one of the greatest philosophers of his time, and perhaps all time. He said that we cannot choose our external circumstances, but we can only choose how to respond to them. And these words encapsulate the core of Stoic philosophy. Through his story, we'll uncover the powerful lessons of the Enchiridion, his manual for living that has guided countless souls through the turbulent seas of life. His teachings help us to find serenity in chaos and strength in vulnerability, and just true freedom whilst sitting within the confines of our own mind. I think a testament to the power of his philosophy is that his ability to accept his situation calmly and resiliently allowed him to go from being a slave who was the property of a power-hungry master to becoming a free man and a celebrated philosopher. This was in a time when there was no such thing as social media to spread your message, and I think it was a truly incredible feat. I'm quite sure that he could never have achieved those dreams if he'd held a grudge or not accepted the responsibility to change his situation, despite it clearly not being his fault at all. So on that, hello and welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast with your host, Samuel Webster Harris. Of course, diving into the psychology of self-improvement and today's teachings of Epictetus and his book, Enchiridion. This episode takes the form of a conversation with my good friend Nicholas Varike, who is also my co-host on the Wiser Than Yesterday podcast. I hope you enjoy the wide-ranging and hopefully happiness-inspiring episode. Epictetus, of course, wrote that it is impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows, so please keep an open mind for what we discuss, and more on that after the break.
Most of all of his principles are gathered around one main concept, and that is the dichotomy of control. And so Epictetus says that some things are in our absolute control, like our thoughts, our decisions, our actions, our likes and dislikes. And other things are not in our control, like our body or what others think of us, our position in life, our properties, etc. And so we should actually only be bothered by things that we can control, and we should absolutely avoid being bothered by things that are outside of our control. So only things that are in our control could consider to be good or bad, and everything outside of our control is indifferent. So we shouldn't worry about them. And I think, yeah, this is a very important takeaway in daily life. People get so agitated when you're driving and someone does something stupid, you get so angry, but that anger really doesn't help yourself. It's not helpful at all. It's actually counterproductive to your happiness.
Exactly. And so if you're trying to be the happiest person, which you usually are, you should focus more on like, okay, how can I still be happy right now, and rate how well you're doing based on these things, rather than like, oh, I'm having a shit day because if someone's done something. It's like, oh, I'm having a shit day because I actually got affected by someone, rather than that doesn't really matter.
Yeah. And as an illustration of this, Epictetus was known to have a lame leg, which isn't helpful. He also was known to be a slave, which usually doesn't make you very happy in life, but still he decided not to let that get to him because that was out of his control and he would only focus on what was inside his control. You'd think that this kind of philosophy would be most popular with people who didn't have a lot. So with slaves who were just then able to say, okay, I'm a slave. I was basically born in a shitty life, but still I'm going to do my best not to let that affect us or affect me. But in the end, there were actually also emperors who followed this philosophy. So it found attraction with, well, everyone in every part of life.
Well, yeah, if you got the time to think about why you're being happy or not, probably helpful. You can imagine being a more effective emperor if you were more controlled by yourself than your emotions, because you might be a bit of an idiot and annoy people and do the wrong things. As in, when things are going well, I think it doesn't really matter so much where you get your happiness from and stuff, but when things go wrong, that's kind of where your test of character is. And to be an emperor, you kind of need to have a good character to deal with these things, you'd imagine.
It's a good point, because I was trying to reflect on my reactions to very emotional moments in my life and how I dealt with them and how I could have dealt with them if I had had the Stoic mindset. But to be honest, I don't think I've yet had like a major emotional setback or something very bad happening to me. So I couldn't really think about how I reacted and how I should have reacted following the Stoic mindset. So it was quite difficult for me to really place myself in that position.
There's still one of the good things about the Vipassana was sort of, you can kind of examine some of like the big things, but also just the core things, or just like small things that like annoy you at an everyday level that you don't even notice annoy you, because it's just so part ingrained of your mentality that it's just like you being you as a normal human. It's your right to kind of be a bit annoyed by this thing. I mean, we have a classic example of driving and stuff, but there's just so many random small things that make you you. And you can like read books like this and be like, oh yeah, I'm going to be more happy. But it can still just be like a little thing that someone might say, and you will notice yourself being a bit annoyed by it. And then like, when you start like thinking about it on a deep level, like, wait, how could I not be annoyed by this like annoying thing, even though it's like, it's not that big. And you start like breaking all those things down and really working out like who the hell you are. And like, it takes some time. But like reading all this stuff does just help you think a bit more when you happen to be in the right frame of mind when something happens.
Absolutely. Actually, you talked about Vipassana. I saw a lot of parallels with Buddhism. And in general, it reinforced my feeling that most philosophies and religions and ways of life in the end boil down to very similar things, where we as humans were designed to live in another world than we live in right now, since, you know, we became sedentary, etc. And most of these ideas or ways of life try to help us in deal with that and be more happy or more content and more useful in general as a human being. That's quite interesting. What are some other takeaways you had from the book?
It was mainly the control thing. That was like the overriding big one of just like most examples felt like somehow led into that, like limiting your desires and aversions. So you're just focusing more on like what you have and being happy with what you've got rather than constantly wanting different things. Basically the same principle.
No, but it's true. Everything comes from that, right? And so one of the parallels he draws is with poker players, for example. Poker players, they get dealt a hand and what they do is it doesn't really matter what their cards are. They just try and make the best of them. And that's what, how he looks at life. Like, okay, you get born in a certain situation. You have certain genetics. I mean, you might be athletic or you might not be athletic. You might be smart. You might not be smart. You might be attractive. You might not be attractive. It doesn't really matter in the end. You just need to work with what you have and make the best of it. And it's up to you how happy you are. It's up to you what you do with it. And it's up to you to reach your maximum potential as a human being.
Yeah, definitely. And so it's like an overriding focus on like your own actions, sort of control what your perceptions are and where you get to in life. And then kind of as a whole sort of section about like, well, character is key and like the form of who you are and being virtuous, like the only thing that really matters and doing what is right and not being concerned by like other people.
What his theory also does is it gives an answer to us when we don't feel like doing something we don't want to do. Like every day we look up against doing something we don't really want, like cleaning the house, for example, or doing the dishes and whatever. And so I think he tries and give an answer to this by saying, look, your house needs to be cleaned. The universe needs it done, or the universe needs you to do it. And it's up to you how you look at the tasks at hand. And it's up to you how to handle those and how you feel while doing the tasks.
Changing your mindset so that you feel that resisting a temptation is more satisfying than indulging it, because of
which exactly
means you just being like, oh, I want this, and then you get it. And certainly in our modern day where we're kind of used to just things instantly on demand, very used to just having what you want. And that's why you get so addicted to your phone or something, because as soon as you're a bit like unsure what to do, you just like, you know that your phone will be there to like give you something to do. And when you sort of start resisting these temptations, that's where you get to the greater achievements in your life and have the good ideas and useful stuff.
What did you think of the parallels he made between your wife and your child and the way you should look at them? What he says in the handbook is that you should not look at your wife and child as them being your wife or child, but look at them as human beings. So when you kiss your wife, you're not kissing your wife, you're kissing a mortal. And so Epictetus says that you should learn to love things without feeling entitled to them, without clinging to them. And that will make it easier for you when change happens and either like they pass away or they get sick, etc., or you separate and so on.
It's one of these things that's like totally true, but can be offensive to people. And the same, I've always been this way around like death and stuff. Like I don't really get too sad about it, because I'm like, well, this person loved me and I love them. They'd be pretty annoyed if I spent the next like year just moping around being depressed and like wasting my life. Like what they want is me to be happy and joyful.
Exactly about that, I had a discussion with my girlfriend. Like what if someone dies? Like how should you react? And if you think about them, not in relation to yourself, but just as a human being and a mortal, and mortals are going to die, it makes it way easier for you to handle it. But then if you don't express emotions when something bad happens, you seem like you're cold and it's like unrespectful in a way. But then is it disrespectful to not be sad when someone dies because they don't exist anymore, etc.? So it was a whole conversation and discussion about that.
And what did you think about you saying like, oh, so when you die, like, I mean, I won't mind too much, I'll be fine.
Exactly. But I mean, it was clear that I wasn't expressing the ideas well enough, because in the book it's written way better. So I need to get it right in my head.
I literally spoke about this with my therapist that I had for a while. when we first went into like death and stuff, she genuinely had like a moment like, oh shit, you're autistic. I'm like, no, I'm not. It's fine. You're not understanding me correctly. And then you're like, oh, actually, yeah, no, okay, you're fine. You have emotions. You understand people. It's okay. And yeah, it's a bit of a weird moment. But it kind of goes with, like, there's another overriding point of kind of just going with the flow, which is something I've always thought of in terms of, if you imagine you're going out to sea or something, you can kind of ride the waves that life gives you, or you can kind of try and fight them and do exactly what you want, but you end up just making a mess because the waves are much more powerful than you. And so like the things that happen in your life that you can't change happen, you just deal with them and like ride the direction that it's going, or you try and fight it, but you still end up making a mess and not really doing what it is that you want. Or like only change what you can inside and not changing stuff that you can't change.
Exactly. I think here you can see how Epictetus influenced Nassim Taleb with this theory about anti-fragility, where random big things happen and you should know that, realize that. And it's about setting up yourself to be ready for them when they happen instead of trying to anticipate them, which is the core of his ideas. So basically, remind yourself of the impermanence of things. Everything changes. Keep that in mind, and you won't be so surprised when things actually change. One of the parallels that Epictetus also used quite a lot in his rules was that of a banquet. And so he compares life to a banquet. And so he said that if there's food somewhere else and you're at the banquet, don't go and chase the food. If the food is in front of you, grab it and take a modest amount. But if the food passes by, don't try and ask for it actively. Basically, the principle was be modest and don't splurge on these kind of things. And so this is one of the things that I can definitely use in my own life.
Because, yeah, I'm pretty bad at this when it comes to food.
Exactly. Like
as soon as like a new thing comes out, if you're like networking about it, like, shit, I had to go eat the thing. Fuck you.
Yes.
But certainly, yeah, I think my sister's husband's very good at just making a decision instantly and just sticking with it. So like if he goes to a restaurant, if he's got like a long menu or something, he'll get to the first page. If he sees something he likes, he'll just close it and like he'll order the first thing that he liked. And you're like, but there's like 10 more pages. There might be something better. What are you doing? And I'm like, what? And it's incredible how we can just be like, yeah, I'm happy, and just be happy. And you're like, I just can't do that. I just have to know. I'm going to have to feel sad because I'm like, there's 10 different things that I want. And like, I don't know which one's the best choice to make. And then like, I sort of spend the next 20 minutes panicking, like, do I want this one or do I want that one? I don't know. Maybe this one's better. Perhaps like there's going to be like a big amount of all these things in the salad, so it'd be better, but it'd be really shit if they just give me a small salad, which often they do at a restaurant. This other thing would be nice, but like maybe it won't. And like, I don't know. And I'll have to wait to questions, and then it won't help me at all.
It made me think of the experiment that was done on the horse race bookmakers, where they were given the choice, like they can get 10 characteristics of horses and use that to predict the winner of the race. And they had certain percentage of accuracy. And then when they received 10 additional characteristics, their accuracy went down. And so more information is not always helpful. And in this case, it's like some weird practical.
Yeah, same. When if I go to like a buffet or something, like it says, then you just end up with like a plate with like one spoon of every single different meal. And you don't really have a meal as such. Whereas like if I was somewhere where they just gave me the one thing and it was really good and I'd just been outside all day and I was kind of hungry and like that was just what was served, like that was the one thing that evening, I'd probably be super happy. But then my whole time running around the buffet trying to eat different things, it's just silly. And it's the same with life, and I could try doing like many different things, probably be happier with less.
Indeed. One other surprising way of thinking I got from the book, where something happens, for example, someone in your life dies or you win the lottery, etc. You should think about how you would react if this happened to someone else. And that is actually the same way you should react when it happens to you. So let's say someone else's child dies. Of course, you feel some sadness, but in the end, the way you think about it is, okay, life is like this. So bad things happen. People get sick, they pass away. But if it happens to yourself, you immediately go into the self-pitying mode where, this is the worst thing that could happen to me. I'm so unlucky. This is horrible. And so Epictetus argues that you should try and think about your own life and everything that happens to you the same way you would look at it if it happened to someone else. Of course, it's easier said than done, but I guess it will help you whenever something really bad happens to you.
That's a very good principle. And on the dual ways, one for yourself to not be so caught up in your emotions, and secondly, to be a nicer human to others. Because often, like, when someone wins a lottery or something, you feel a bit jealous. You're like, oh, why did that happen to them and not me? But if you could be happy for them, that's great. And when someone dies and you kind of don't really give them the time of day and they're having, like, a shit day because of, like, the worst things happened to them in the world, like, it's nice if you could be a bit nicer to them. So these things are kind of useful. Have you heard, like, the parable of the Chinese farmer and, like, the horses? So there's, like, a Chinese farmer and one day his horse runs away. Everyone in his village is like, this is so terrible. We're so sorry for you. You've lost like a horse. It's like the most important thing. You need to like, pull your farm equipment and stuff. And he's like, it's okay. Maybe it's bad. Maybe it's good. And then the next day, the horse comes back with three other horses that it met in the wild and stuff. And then everyone's like, oh my God, it's so amazing. You've got like so many horses. You're going to have the best life the rest of your life. Everything is wonderful. And he's like, no, I guess it's okay. Whatever. And then the next day, his son is trying to train these wild horses and he falls over and falls off and like breaks part of his back or something, and it's terrible. And everyone's like, oh, this is the worst thing ever. Your life is like, we're so sad for you. And he's like, oh, well. And then the next day, because there's a great war going on in China, the officials come to recruit all the young, healthy men. And so all the young, healthy men go to basically get slaughtered in this war. And his son is still at home and is slowly recovering from his injury. And the point is, like, you can't control what's going on in life. You can just sort of be a bit more passive and not like so emotional about the whole thing, because of it's not always going in the direction you expect it to be, and probably much more sensible if you just sort of chill out a bit more and things. So kind of relates directly to all of these things that Vic's been saying.
Very nice story. Yeah, I mean, all over the world, people were struggling with the same things and trying to find answers, like different ideas and different principles, but the core of it is always the same, very similar. All right. Well, one final point I'd like to make was the one where how you respond to people insulting you. And so basically Epictetus says that if you learn that someone speaks ill of you, respond with, yes, absolutely, I fully agree. And he doesn't even know half of it, because he could have said way more.
I love that bit.
I found that super strong, because if you think about it, like if someone tries to insult you and says something bad to you and you're like, man, you should know the reality. It's like even way worse than this. Then it shows, like, it immediately disarms the person trying to insult you, because you're not insulted. And you it shows that you don't care about what they think or how they speak of you. And it's something that I'm personally very bad at. Like, I always get too emotionally attached to these kind of opinions. What other people think of me? And I think if you're able to really use this strategy, it's going to be very strong.
Definitely would have been very helpful if I'd understood this more as a child.
Exactly.
Yeah, little things that can annoy you back then. Whereas like now I just wouldn't give like a crap about the whole thing. And it's like, well, why'd I even get annoyed about someone calling me Samantha? I mean, maybe I could call myself Samantha. I wouldn't even mind being a woman. That would be fine.
Oh, exactly. If you said that, they'd be like, what? Yeah, it's a strong strategy. I mean, here in Belgium, we have one famous stand-up comedian who is actually, I think the good term is now a little person. And so like half of his jokes are about that. Like he just makes fun of himself. And it makes you like way more relatable, way more likable, and no one's going to be able to use that as an insult to you. So it's literally like being offended is literally the choice of the offended person, because it says most about the person like saying the offense. For example, being racist says more about the person who is racist than it says about the victim of the racism. I actually had a discussion about this with my girlfriends. I had the impression that in this politically correct world and these days, whenever you say something, you have to think about what is the worst way this, what I'm saying, could be perceived, as opposed to when you hear something which is offensive, people are entitled to perceiving it in the worst way instead of thinking, okay, what is the best way this could be meant?
Definitely. So annoying. Just really frustrating when people get offended. But it's so hard to explain to people this principle when they're in the process of getting offended and you're like, oh no, you're offending yourself. I didn't mean that at all. What are you doing? You're like, oh, geez.
It does
just make it worse if someone is praying to these things. And,
yes.
And like the age old maxim, sticks and stones can break your bones, but words will never hurt you kind of thing. It's like pretty much summarizes this book in many ways. Mm. And it's a good one to take on. I think people have their own opinions. They can be idiots or great, but why should that affect you so much?
Exactly. So to conclude, there are a lot of things outside of your control. Just realize that they're outside of your control and focus on what is inside your control. Basically, your opinions, your actions, your likes and dislikes. And if you focus on that and make the best of it, you'll be happy and satisfied and a useful human being.
Yeah. Let's go into, I think we discussed this last book, where he speaks about his mother in the book before, and how he was explaining like his dad was like maybe a more angry human than most men. And yet many men like beat their wives, but his mum was like more accepting of the situation beforehand and sort of didn't make problems for herself. I was just sort of thinking, oh, well, what about like feminism and racism and things that should be changed and this stuff? Because they were just saying that people should accept words is like not the best in this situation.
This book doesn't really motivate like activism?
Yeah, it's definitely the anti-version, like the Rebecca Solnit book of like, hey, people might not listen and they're going to be idiots, but you should still like live the life of trying to change the world.
This book is more about, okay, so many things are outside of your control. Maybe the way you could use this book in kind of that setting as a first step, learn to realize that like people are stupid and you don't have control over them. So as a first step, learn to be okay with that, to deal with these kind of things. And as a second step, you can then try and change other people or help them do the similar things, I guess.
Definitely. You shouldn't get angry or be annoyed by anyone, but it's good to feel that anger and like use that as a force for change if it's going to help improve the world.
Exactly. Well, one of the fun things of the book I found was that he was greatly influenced by Socrates. And so he made quite a lot of references to him. So at the end, those sort of last rule talks about Socrates. And so when he died, basically he died with a smile on his face because living wasn't in his control. That's what was in his control was the way he reacted to his death, which was smiling. And so we as humans, whatever happens to us, we always have the choice of how to deal with it. We always have a choice.
Yes. Even when it doesn't feel like we have a choice, we always have a choice. And this is actually one of the fundamental principles of learned helplessness and realizing that there is something we can do and a fundamental concept in Stoicism. But anyway, this is the end of the episode. So thank you again for Nico on the helpful insights and making sure that I actually finished reading the book. These ancient philosophers didn't always write with the engaging tone of our modern heroes, but I do think it is very good to spend some time learning from the original sources. Epictetus wrote that men are disturbed not by things, but by the views which they take of them. And life is certainly a whirlwind of difficulties, priorities, and of course, mistakes and injustices. But at least, I think most of us that are listening aren't slaves with regular beatings. So if Epictetus was able to choose happiness, it is clearly within our capacity to see the brighter side of life. And if you are happening to feel unusually positive and happy, you might want to slam a comment or a 5-star rating onto Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or YouTube. Just saying, I mean, what's the worst that can happen? Probably nothing. Of course, myself, I shall be too busy being outrageously happy myself this week to care either way, but deep inside, do know that it will be appreciated and I will probably read every single comment that gets written, and that leaving a positive rating will serve to remind yourself how kind and awesome you are. So do this for yourself, not me. Anyway, regardless of your commenting and rating behavior, I do wish you untold happiness in this life and hope that this episode has given you a little nudge in the direction of finding happiness now in the simple present moments of life, and maybe helped stop you from putting happiness off behind some obscure future goals that will undoubtedly shift out of reach before you get there, just like my positive ratings targets. And with that, be kind to yourself and everyone else.